At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it is Friday. Viernes. Yeah, and the Impractical Jokers are in the Talk is Jericho house. All right, so two of the four Impractical Jokers are here today. That's close enough. Half of them are here, so the Impractical Jokers are here. And I got, probably the two funniest ones, in my opinion. I got Salvatore, Sal Volcano, and Brian Q. Quinn. If you haven't seen their improv comedy show on True TV, you got to. I mean, these guys are so funny. They pull pranks and gags on each other, usually in public, and always laugh out loud funny. Their four high school friends, Sal and Q, James Murray, and Joe Gatto. Good news, they just got picked up for season 6 on True TV. So today, Sal and Q, and they're huge Jerichoholics, by the way, they're going to tell us how they got started in comedy, what it's like filming Impractical Jokers on the streets of New York City. They'll also share some of the pranks and gags that didn't work out, whether they've ever been busted by the police for stuff they've tried to film, and what a few of their favorite comedy bits from the show have been. Like I said, they're also big wrestling fans. Turns out that I've met Q before. I didn't remember it. It's a great story involving Las Vegas. And Q even has the picture to prove it. You'll hear all about that as well. And also, too, we'll hear all about the tattoo that Sal has on his thigh of a certain megastar's son. Yeah, it's pretty freaking embarrassing. It's very also very freaking hilarious. The Impractical Jokers are here. We're going to talk all about that. We're also going to talk all about right now the huge event on November 20th in Toronto at the Bassett Theater. You know what I'm talking about, right? Live Talk is Jericho with my special guest, AJ Styles. It's a live Talk is Jericho with AJ Styles. Once again, November 20th in Toronto at the Bassett Theater, starting at 10 a.m. There are still some tickets left, but they really are going fast. That's not a cliche. Go to markoutmoments.com for all information. We've got the live Talk is Jericho. We've got still a limited amount left of the VIP meet and greet tickets. AJ and I are also doing a special brunch an hour before the event, which will be at 10 a.m. So come have some breakfast with us. These tickets are also available at markoutmoments.com. It's going to be a lot of fun. So get your tickets before they're gone. Markoutmoments.com. 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 It's a live Talk is Jericho with my special guest, AJ Styles, in Toronto before Survivor Series. Come check out our show, then go check out the WWE show right after. It's a full day of Jericho on November 20th. And AJ Styles as well. He'll be on Survivor Series also. So do not miss it. And also don't miss Brian Q. Quinn and Sal Volcano. That's his real name. Impractical Jokers are ready to bring the laughs. And that's L-A-F-F-S to Talk is Jericho.
I think he wanted us to get off the 42nd, but I guess this is okay. Yeah, because they jumped up a whole bunch of, like, they jumped up like 10 minutes.
Well, 42nd and
there. Yeah, but it's okay. It just jumped up. A few minutes. I guess if you're using Waze, I'm using Google Maps.
So. All right, so I'm here with Sal and LeQ from Impractical Jokers, and I was here right on time.
Right away.
12 noon. And it's now 12:23, so that's 23 minutes I've paid for. I'm just sitting here reading about who Trump's running mate is. So I think you're the culprit, Sal. What happened?
I am. We were both going to be late, though.
Listen, I was in the lobby watching CBS at the appointed
time. See, he was watching Trump's thing,
yes.
Too.
Were you really there at 12:04? Because I thought you were going to be a little later, like you said.
No, 12:04 I was there. And I had to park, too. I didn't just get dropped
okay,
off.
Okay, so I don't know. I'm not making excuses. I'm just telling you factually what happened.
Let's see what happened. At first, I thought it was an impractical joke on me.
No, this like, is not. That's a terrible joke.
We'll just keep dominance by make you wait for us a little bit. But
I think my chair is actually a little bit lower than yours as well.
Well, we've been texting lately and joking around about big timing.
Yeah, big timing, right? And
I was joking around. I told you I got a check for $407 from being on a TV show. So I like big timing people that way.
Yeah, and then I told you that I got a check for $0.00.
Is that true?
From WCW. Yes, that is true.
They cut it?
Yeah, like $0.00. And I got another FedEx package from WCW with nothing in it.
How do you know that's not just someone just playing around with
you? There was plenty of impractical jokes played on me back in those times. But so what happened? So tell us about
your experience. Nothing like I just want to let you know I was diligent. I looked at my I took a Uber here and I looked at the Google Maps to see how long it would take. It's at 31 minutes. I left 36 minutes before.
I saved myself
5 minutes, so just in case of a huge emergency.
Sure.
No, I mean, I was hoping to roll up. I didn't have to park, so I was hoping. But then it just took like 50 something minutes to get here. First of all, here's the thing. I told you this right when I got here. We're gonna decide on a rating for this guy because I'm very serious with my Uber.
Right. Sure.
Because they take it serious too. Because you know this is their job. So you rate them low. So I don't really throw out low ratings ever.
Okay. Well, unless they do a bad job.
Yeah.
It's like tipping, right? Like you tip, but then it becomes just like an instinct rather than actually tipping for service. I have a problem
it's
with
expected,
that.
Though.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Tipping's just expected.
If somebody recognizes you, then you know you got the extra 35% tax that's gotta go on right away.
Yeah. Or else Jericho's a cheap son of a bitch. Yeah, but if you don't give me good service, I'm not gonna go over out of my way to do it, right?
Right.
So for the Uber rating, it's the same.
Yeah, and you know we get rated on Uber too. I don't know if you Uber, but we get rated too. I didn't know that.
Passengers do.
Yeah. Oh. I didn't know that in the beginning.
Right.
So like in the beginning, I would be vocal if someone, I'm the nicest person, but if someone, like one time a guy went completely the wrong way and we took like an extra mile or two, you know, and I was like, wait, that's going to make me later charge you. So I was complaining to him about it. And I guess I found out later that they rate you, and I looked in and at the beginning my rating was low because I guess that guy just killed me because I complained to him. I was like, this is not right. You're trying to like get
you gave him the business.
I gave him the business.
Yeah. Gave it right back to you.
But now like I know I'm rated. I get it. I'm like, hello.
Do you use your real name? Does it say Sal Volcano?
Yes.
I love that last name, by the way. Sal Volcano. It'd be a great wrestling name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess
Galen
so.
From Queens, New York. Sal Volcano.
Yeah.
You'd have a little, like, Adidas sweatshirt on that you just unzip and put your hand up in the air and then get crushed, like, in 2 minutes by King Kong Bundy or something.
Sign me up. I just talked to King Kong. My Chris is his
what?
Name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did you talk to
King Kong? I noticed
Bundy?
That he followed. We're huge wrestling fans. I noticed he followed me on Twitter. And I grew up, like, I literally was ringside watching him little when I was young. And I wrote him that. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I have picked Polaroid photos of him from ringside. Side.
Wow.
From when I was like 86, like that.
So did you DM him?
Yeah, and he wrote me back. He's like, I love the show. You guys are the best. We got to hang when you come to Philly.
Isn't that the best?
Yeah.
I noticed about a year ago that David Hasselhoff was following me.
Oh, great.
And so what do you do? Like instantly follow him.
Right.
And then do I write him a message? Does he even care? Is it a mistake?
Right.
Is he going to unfollow me if I send this message? Like, what's the protocol there?
Right.
You got to see how many people they follow. Because if they follow 10,000 people, then I know that I'm nothing special.
Okay.
Right. But if they follow 500 people, and that's the hassle.
Then you know
that's an active choice.
I'll write them right away. I'll just be like, what's up?
Tay Diggs started following everyone one time, the actor. And I was like, oh my God, Tay Diggs. And I looked, and he followed 200,000 people.
So is that just a gimmick?
I guess it's just his people, like, doing some type of number fudging.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Not caring that you're getting a DM from every, you know, crazy fan in the world, right?
Yeah. And then one time we were at some type of premiere, and Tay Diggs went by and literally pushed me.
He pushed you out of the way.
We were at Upfronts, actually.
He literally trying to take a picture of Tay Diggs.
No, Tay Diggs physically pushed me. Like, he was walking
Tay
by.
Tay Diggs is like, get out of the way.
And he put his hand here and was like, push me and like walked out of the way. And I was like, oh my God, you follow me on Twitter. What are you doing?
Hey, it's me. It's Sal Volcano.
You got big time.
Yeah.
You got big time. See how it feels?
It comes around.
I got big time the other day. The kid from Walking Dead, Carl.
Yeah.
I went to go see School of Rock, and he was sitting in the front row, and like everybody was just like talking to him and paying attention. He was sitting front row center. I was all the way to the right. I was like, hey, I like Walking Dead too. He just flicked his gorgeous hair at me and kept watching the show.
I kept walking, nothing.
I was like, I'm in the club. I'm on TV.
See, but do you find that, like, because the Impractical Jokers, I mean, you guys are blowing up. Do people just know the name, or do they recognize each guy? Like, do they know the four of you at this point? Like, for example, I bet you
Sal's name.
Okay, but I bet you Carl probably knows Impractical Jokers. He's the demographic.
You would think.
But maybe didn't recognize seeing you guys face to face.
Yeah, we got some friends on Walking Dead that have come visit our set and stuff.
Chris
yeah,
Cerritos.
No, people.
What a bearing Walking Dead here. This is not a Talk is Jericho versus Walking
no,
Dead.
No, not at all.
We would lose that battle.
No,
we would
saying,
all lose that battle. We,
yeah, there are some Walking Dead Impractical Joker friends.
Yeah, we've been to, they came to our set and stuff. But no, people invest in us. Like early on, like we were just like, we actually, when we sold, we were trying to sell the show, another network offered to
MTV.
Buy it. Yeah, but they
MTV.
Wanted to make it a game show with four different
big leaguing us again. Didn't even turn us.
Was that Harvey Weinstein texting you?
It was on silent.
Was that Tay Diggs DMing you? Call back.
Oh man, I feel so bad. All right.
So when you were first on another network, MTV.
Oh, yeah, they wanted to make it a game show, and they had to have four different people on every episode. And then we went to True, and we were like, we'd rather play ourselves and let people like invest in us coming back.
We had a deal from True and MTV. And True was like, we will put you four on TV. MTV was like, we'll just mail checks to your house.
Gotcha.
I got outvoted 3-1. I said, you guys freaking crazy? Like,
but
what are you
talking
about?
But is MTV even a viable thing in this day and age?
I don't think for our demographic.
Like, what's their hottest show right now?
Well, they made the show anyway that we didn't do. They just made it.
Yeah, yeah.
They just
called it
something else.
Yeah, it was called something else. And
they hired that director.
Really?
Yeah.
So MTV big lead you guys.
It was. I don't think it's around, but I think we made the right choice
because now you guys have gotten five seasons. You're in the midst of your fifth season.
Yeah.
Huge hit.
Yeah. I mean, we're up to 130 episodes now, something like that, which is a lot. I mean,
no, but the thing is, this just started because the four of you guys are all high school friends, friends.
Yeah, we met. High school, 1990.
I mean, that's amazing. And so what did you guys used to do at that time frame to start getting into where you are now?
Not much.
Did you play tricks on the teacher?
Well, I was late for school a lot. You know, my Uber.
we went to like an all boys Catholic high school in Staten Island. It was called Monsignor Farrell High School, and it was a place that kind of celebrated the boys will be boys, because the teachers were all retired cops, retired firemen, like teachers who retired from other schools. So like
nuns, priests.
Yeah, yeah. But everybody had a very like it's boys will be boys attitude. Yeah. So when spring came. Spring fever hit hard. There were no girls to focus on, so we would all just do stupid shit. Are we allowed to curse? I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so we would all just do stupid shit.
At the studio engineer, who I've never met before. He's in charge.
He's giving me the finger, so I think it's okay. So then we would have, like, things in the school. We had little rice capades where everybody brought in rice and just opened it in the hallway. We had a
it was crazy.
You know what happened? Oh, you guys are
wacky. Like at 3 o'clock every day, everybody would do it. Like everybody brought in animals one day, so there was like chicanery and nonsense. But it wasn't like a breeding ground for.
Nah, we just. I mean, we were all friends. We weren't like. It wasn't like the four of us like a
wacky gang of pranksters. Yeah.
No, we were all friends, but it wasn't like we didn't just hang out with each other. And then like we went away after school, didn't see each other for a few years, but when we came back, we were all doing some type of writing, performing comedy, and then we were like, oh, let's try to do something together. We formed this comedy troupe in 99 after college called the Tenderloins, which is our identity outside of Impractical Jokers. We still,
that's who
we perform
as. Well, it's the name we own.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it an improv group? Or?
It was improv and sketch, yeah.
Okay, great.
But the live show now is more like a...
Yeah, because you guys do live shows.
Yeah.
Because we were actually at one point, I don't think we even know the reason how, but we were going to hook up in Tampa. My producer was talking to somebody from your camp, and we were going to do it when you guys had a live show in Tampa.
What happened.
I think it just didn't work out schedule-wise, or I just said turn it down and said forget it. For the hell these guys or something like that. But what does your live show entail? So I want to talk about the TV show, but what's the live show?
Yeah, the live show, we've been like touring it for like 4 years now. We're on our third iteration, so like our third hour of material. And it's like... We do like we tell stories, we do crowd work, we do some like stand up, we show videos. It's like a mixed bag of all different stuff. It's multimedia. We'll pull up pictures, we'll pull up letters. It's about our lives, basically. If the first tour was about like the show, you'd say, right?
Yeah.
How we made the show, how we got the show.
It's all four of us on stage at the same time, so it's not like we trade off.
Right.
Yeah, please. And now it's a little like moving away from that and just kind of focusing more about just us, our opinions, our lives and stuff, because it's like standalone.
Pull gags on the audience?
We did in the last show, We took their phone and just messed around with their contacts in there. We want to do something like that for the new version of it, but we haven't quite figured out what that is yet. These things come organically to us. Like that bit that became like the showcase bit of the second version of the show, Sal just did it one night and the audience went berserk and we were like, like, could we do this again the next night? Right. And then, you know, then it's like, oh, wait, now we got 5 minutes figured out. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
So we're still finding it.
5 minutes figured out, only 95 to go.
What we do is take the person's phone and scroll randomly and stop, and whoever we stop on, we text that person in their phone, I tested positive, and that's it. And then we wait till they text back, which comes 8 seconds later, just a slew of texts back, and then we announce it, like, and then we write that person back as the other person, you know?
Talk is Jericho.
But so let's talk about some of the stuff you do on the show, because, you know, watching the show, a lot of stuff you guys do is making gags on yourself. A lot of stuff I'm wondering how you're not getting arrested for it. For example, like when you went to the pool to ask the maybe it was you that had to have the sex talk
oh, God,
with the kids in the pool, Sal.
Yeah.
How can you do that and not have the cops arresting you for sexual harassment or pedophilia or something like this?
Sure. Well, I didn't do it.
Yeah, right.
I said
you were supposed to.
But then Joe came out.
No, I came out.
Oh, you came out and did it.
This is the one time I got hate mail on the show. People are like, if you ever did that in front of my son, I would kill you.
Right.
Which I get. I get it. But, you know, just as a comedian and a performer, like in the moment, it was just funny to do it.
Mm.
And at least I used technical words.
You did it.
I said the penis into a vagina, and that's sex. It wasn't
like 8-year-old kids or something at the swimming pool.
It wasn't great. I admit now it wasn't great, but at least I wasn't like, you take your sweaty balls and you put it in a woman, which is how I do it. You know what I mean? Like, I tried to be as clinical as possible.
He doesn't use the penis.
Yeah, if you put the balls in a woman, it doesn't work as well. But when there's cases like that, are you ever worried that, like, there's going to be a stray dad come by and punch you in the face, or a cop come by? Like,
Cops would never worry about it. Because we've had the cops called us on us a few times, and every single time the cop is like, oh my God, I love your show. Can I get a picture with you? And they're like, yeah, take care of this pesky, you know, miscreant over here complaining about it. And the cops are like, what's wrong with you? They're funny guys. Get out of here.
Right.
And then we take a picture and it's usually fine. But we also try not to do anything offensive at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we try and really just keep it on us, make fun of Sal, make fun of me, make fun of, you know, we try not to do anything that people will get offended about.
Yeah, maybe 10% of it is like actual edge.
Yeah.
You know,
the rest of it is just taking the piss out of each other.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So the concept of the show, for people that don't know it, is you basically go and, well, you explain it. Basically go pull gags on each other, but you don't know what's coming, but you do it in a public forum.
Yeah, so basically it's a hybrid of a bunch of types of shows, because we get labeled as a prank show or a reality show. But we write the show. We improvise a lot, but we also write it and have a team of writers come up with the concepts. And I have lines prepared for him that he doesn't know about, and vice versa. And it's the four of us friends competing against each other in these social situations. I'll tell you, this is a good description. When we first tried to sell the show, we named it Mission Uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole thing was about getting out of our comfort zone, throwing each other under the bus. And we'll do, like, there's one element of the show that really gets, like, talked up a lot when we do interviews, is that we wear an earpiece and we tell each other what we have to say and do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say no, you lose. And whoever says no the most at the end of the show gets punished. And you cannot say no to that. But there's like 2/3 of the show that is an earpiece, that is all just literal games and situations we've created that we put ourselves into. Everything from, like, you know, taking food off someone's plate, or, you know, putting stuff in people's pockets instead of taking it out, and seeing who can get the most stuff in, and just all weird stuff that you'd never want to get caught doing. That it gets your heart racing as soon as you start to think about
it.
Like, you know, if we were at a restaurant or out at somewhere, and I said to you, go up to that person and try to do this, like, you do start to race a little bit. Your heart does, because it's like, you just know you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to. And we try to do that, you know, just against, it's really not anything toward the people, but it's just against you. Most people laugh and think it's fun and everything like that. You know,
other people, do you have people ever get mad when you try and do stuff?
Sometimes that happens, but honestly, normally they're the type of person that's prone to get angry just for no reason. Like, anybody who's gotten angry very rarely has a good reason, because we try not to, even when we're caught. Like, it's usually like, you know, we have a way of making it like, well, you caught us being a stupid idiot, like little scamps. And people usually laugh and they're like, oh my God, that's so stupid. Or they enjoy it. People who get angry are the people of it that would get angry.
Like, there was one time I saw you guys were in a library and you had like little noisemakers and the balloon. Yeah. the air horn.
Yeah.
And then the lady comes and grabs it and throws it in the garbage. Yeah, like that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, so that's a good example of one where we're not telling each other what to do. The purpose of that one was to see how much noise you can make in a library before you get thrown out.
Right.
So who could do it? So we would wait, like he would go, and then we wait for that library to clear, and new people come in, and then I would go. But the twist is, like, let's say, like, he didn't know what he had to make noise with because we chose it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I came in there and they had cymbals under the table. You know what I mean? So, you know, so it's like we had our own little touch to it. I think it's a show about really, and this is as trite as it sounds, about our friendship mm-hmm. versus anything else, because it's not a typical prank show. We're not like just picking people out and like messing with those people and that's it to no end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a reality. Most reality
and
TV is contrived.
No. He didn't have to bang the cymbals.
Right.
But he would just get a loss. And then that leads to the punishment.
Well, the punishments are horrible, though.
Yeah, like I had to teach my parents how to have sex. I had to teach sex ed to my parents.
That was your punishment.
Yeah, and it cuts down to TV to 2 minutes, but I had to do it for 45 minutes. And they made the slides that I had to teach them about. So it's like, you don't want to do that.
What is your dad saying when you're doing this? Like,
my dad's just shaking his head. My mother is like sort of religious, and she was just getting disgusted because like they gave me like a donut and a hot dog to demonstrate, and then they gave me two donuts to demonstrate lesbian sex. I'm just trying to get the donuts together. It was like, it's just hard. It's just like stupid shit like that. And you don't want to do it. I'd rather bang the cymbals together
sure.
than do that.
I mean, it'll range from something like that to something physical, too. Like, I'm... Well, you just did this to me recently, didn't you? But I'm like, oh, I'm terrified of like...
By the time we air the show, it'll air.
I'm terrified of like scary things, like haunted. I don't do haunted houses and stuff, so they'll put me in something like that. Did the virtual?
Yeah, virtual reality, I don't think aired yet, but it will air. But I'm sure.
They'll come back to the well for me on germs, disgusting things, and scaring me because I'm a germaphobe. So they literally made me. Like they put me on a garbage barge and just set it out to sea, and I had to find my phone in the middle of like 2 tons of garbage. I was there for like 45 minutes looking for it. It was ringing. I was trying to find. They made me dig through elephant crap to find my car keys. Like it could be that we threw Murray out of a plane. He's scared of heights. Yeah. But
let me just ask a question.
Yeah.
How do you procure a pile of elephant crap per se?
Oh, it's easy. You want some by 2 o'clock? I'll get you some.
No.
It was a circus in town.
Okay.
So he's like, can we get some elephant shit? And they're like, yeah, go right ahead.
Take all you want.
Elephant, we're trying to get rid of it. Yeah, but it's just like that kind of stuff. They put me in a corn maze once at like dusk, and they made it haunted, which I'm not good with at all.
Made it haunted?
We
hired 12-year-old actresses to stand there in creepy dresses and point at them. Like,
children.
That's haunted, Chris.
Children walking around alone in a cornfield.
You know those children were? The ones that you scared by trying to give them the sexy. They're like, we're gonna get this bastard back.
Yeah, so they keep upping it though. So then one time they drove us out a couple of hours away to a mansion. They locked me in it and shut the lights, and that was a haunted mansion. And then recently, this guy, tell him what you did.
What happened is I got a virtual reality thing, the Vive, and I had it, and they had this scary game in it called Sisters, where you put on. I don't know if you've had a chance to use these things.
I have not.
But it's once you put this helmet on, you forget that you're not in. That's how good the virtual reality is right now. So it's this
everything's 3D and
it's
surrounding you.
Wherever you look, you're there.
Okay.
So there's this game called Sisters, and like in it, there's these horrible, creepy little girls that just come out of nowhere, and you're in a room, and the lightning's going, and the lights go off, a TV comes on, you're like in a horrible Twilight Zone episode. So luckily I was able to get Justin Roiland. You ever see Rick and Morty, the show Rick and Morty? It's one of the best shows ever. He hooked me up with this game with the people at it, because it's so scary. I was scared. I don't really get scared of stuff like that. So we put Sal in it, right, in this little booth. But what he didn't know was we recreated – because like when you were in it, you're in this old Victorian room.
Yeah, and your eyes and the headphones, they put on noise-canceling headphones and your eyes. So you're immersed.
You're just in the world.
Yeah.
So while he was in it, dealing with it, and it's scary. So already we have the footage of Sal like leap in while stuff comes out of them in the game. Once again, scary little girls. But we made the room so like let's say, you know, it was a little bit smaller than this, but when he couldn't see or hear, we removed the walls and we had accurately recreated the game from the room around them, down to the wallpaper. The company sent us the wallpaper, the furniture specs, the TV that goes on with the same thing playing on the TV.
So I played through the whole game, and when I was done, I was like, I'm taking this off now. I didn't know what to expect, because when I walked in the room, it just looked like this.
Yeah.
Right. It was actually probably more than, it was bigger than this.
Yeah. We just had removable walls. We shot it in the studio.
Oh, right. And so then when I opened it up, it was the whole, I was in the fucking, it was in the thing. And I was like, no. I ran to the door, door's locked. And then all of a sudden, things start coming out of the fireplace, the walls, like, coming out. Oh, man, it's terrible. I picked up a chair, you know.
Swinging a chair at a 12-year-old girl.
I told her, I know you're an actress. I know your mom's here. There's union rules. I said, but I don't give a shit. I will take a swing. Do not come near me because it's a different type of thing going on right now. You put yourself here, and you're going to get hurt. She's going to get hurt. I'm, like, trying to humanize. I'm like, what's your real name? She's in paint.
What's your real name?
She looks at her. She goes, dude, you're 40. Like, that's how it ends. Like, just die and laugh.
What kind of stuff they get you on, Q?
Jesus. Recently, it's probably going to go a little later in the season, but basically, like, I'm not, like, just tarantulas just scare the shit out of me.
As do me.
Right.
Yeah.
And
how about a couple dozen?
Yeah. They put me in a situation where I was dealing with about a dozen tarantulas, and I think, like, the crew afterwards was, like, pulling me aside and be like, yo, we're sorry. Like, because I was, like, it's the first time you've ever really seen me on the show flat out terrified. Mm-hmm. Like, I am, like, not even thinking about how I'm going to look on TV, not even thinking about whether it's funny or not, not even thinking of anything besides, like, I have to get away, like, a primal instinct took over, and it was horrible. It was horrible.
So the unwritten rule between, like, the look on your face, you're still terrified.
I'll show you a
freaked out by this, man.
It was because we tied him down. I don't care.
It's a trailer. Anything goes on before. But the unwritten rule between you four guys is that you have to do it.
Yes.
And what if you just said no?
We can't.
You can't.
It's happened. It's really happened. It happened. He had me do something recently with heights, which I'm afraid of, and I froze. But he anticipated.
But I knew he was going to be able to. I put him in a situation that I knew he wouldn't be able to do, and then I had a worse backup for it to spring on him when he didn't do it. So that went according to plan.
But that was the only time, I think, in 150 punishments or something like that.
I just saw this movie that my niece showed me called Would You Rather? And it's kind of a crazy horror movie, but these people get put into a room by a rich guy, and they have to do one task or the other. Would you rather stab Sal in the thigh or stab yourself in the thigh? And it's just kind of, that's what this reminds me of. Would you rather stand on heights or jump into a vat of tarantulas, you know?
Yeah. Oh, my God, the feminist one. Tell them what you did to me. This was horrible.
Yeah, we do. So they really, like, we, like, yeah.
This was horrible.
This went viral, too. This got, like, 2 million views on YouTube. It was crazy.
They really runs the gamut of what we'll do. So this one was another type of one that we do, where we put him on a panel in front of an audience, on a panel about feminist discussion with all prominent female leaders, speakers, feminists, and they had an open dialogue about the state of, you know, women in society and all this other stuff. But in front of a full audience, like a very, like,
a like-minded audience.
Yeah.
You know, and important social topics.
And we said to him, you're going to be introduced as an expert in the field that is like-minded, but every time you get asked a question, which we wrote all the questions, we moderated that, but they didn't know. No one knew. Mm-hmm. You're going to somehow start to slightly disagree with everything they say.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, like, you're just going to be disagreeing with every single thing. So that is really tough. Yeah. Like, he's on stage with three other panelists in front of, like, 100 people, and they're talking about women's, like, equal pay and their roles in politics and the government, all this other stuff like that. And he'd be like, yeah, I agree with you, but also, and he'd have to keep on adding caveats, and it got worse and worse and worse until we were just sweating in the back watching it.
It was bad.
You know what I mean?
They said, like, you know, there are no jobs for men or women. Women can do any job. So I had to disagree with it. So I'm sitting there in front of a room full of feminists and feminist panelists going, like, yeah, but I also want my car to run right. So if I pull into a garage and I want my alternator change, you know, I want a guy there. I agree, women's rights for everything.
And then he kept on doing that. I agree, but.
So what,
let's be honest. I'm going to go to the guy mechanic.
Yeah. What kind of a reaction are you getting for this?
Oh, I mean, people are shaking their heads. People in the audience are getting angry.
Well, shocked, too. People are just like this.
Yeah.
Mouth open. Just like they can't believe what's going on.
One woman talked about how Michelle Obama's a hero to the United States, and I was sitting there going, well, she did get to the White House by sleeping with a man, and people were like just like in the chair, like looking, like going nuts and stuff.
When this sort of stuff happens, even though you're super uncomfortable, are you thinking to yourself, oh, this is making great TV?
Afterwards, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Sometimes you get so wrapped up, you're thinking of nothing else. But we executive produce, write, edit the show. We do everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm out there. It's the thing that we have to do. We have to shut it down and make sure we perform. And we want to perform real, too. Because we're comedians, too. But I don't want to go out there and be a comedian. If I was hired by someone to go out there and do those things, I would toughen up and just do it. You know, but like, I'm playing it real.
You got to play it straight. It's not like a Tom Green thing where you're being the wacky guy on the street. You know,
I make believe, like, you know, it's just like if we were doing it ourselves, I would get that nervous. And I play it real. But we also know, okay, in the back of our heads, this is going to be funny. They made me crash a wedding.
This was good.
Ask for the microphone and give a speech to the bride and groom. Never met them. Never met anyone at the wedding. Didn't know one person at the wedding. I walked in. I said, excuse me, I'd like to make a toast. The DJ handed me the thing. And then I pulled out of my pocket a speech they wrote that I had never seen before.
Oh, that these guys wrote.
Yeah, and I read that speech to the... And they were...
He goes, he knows the bride like no one else because he's his gynecologist. He's a gynecologist.
Yeah. Like, just... And then there were people... There were people holding people back from running up. Because some of them get like that. But then afterwards we'll say it, and like people are like, oh, and they laugh. And then like, I should mention this. I did not know this, but the bride and groom were the only two people who knew.
I was going to say, because you don't want to take the chance of spoiling their
no,
wedding.
No. We couldn't do. So you find ways. Like, I didn't know who knew. Like, I know how the show works, so I knew we had to have an in. We couldn't just... crash it. But I was like, when I was going, I didn't know if it was like maybe it was the groom's brother and that they didn't even know. So I didn't know who in there knew. So there's
like, well, you're talking about the feminist convention or whatever it was, the feminist chat.
Yeah,
who is allowing you guys to go in there knowing how serious of a topic this is? Like, is it hard to break into those areas sometimes?
Yeah,
it is. We have a team of people.
We set that up, didn't we?
Yeah, we're learning more and more how to do these things. But we have a team of people that like will help us bring our ideas to fruition. But with this one, we actually contacted the speakers and said, we have this idea. This is our show. This is the kind of thing we do. Would you mind helping us set this up and moderate this panel? And we'll invite these people. So we were the people that helped produce it, but it was real.
So why would they say okay?
Because, I mean, they have a good sense of, you know, feminists are like everybody, you know what I mean? Like,
all the feminists are fun.
Yeah, you know, feminists, fun, F stands for fun, F stands for feminism. Sure,
we get turned down, too.
Yeah, but they have a good sense of humor about it, you know what I mean?
When someone's on camera, for example, at the wedding or the feminist, I keep calling it convention for lack of a meeting, does everybody have to sign a release that's on TV?
Yeah.
Now, sometimes do certain people go, that, I'm not doing it.
A lot, yeah.
Really?
Sometimes it'll ruin a bit, unfortunately. Really? We had a great bit in IKEA. This was 3 years ago.
Probably five.
Where Joe was just hitting him with pillows and doing all stupid stuff. And we were dying laughing. We're like, this is going to be a home run. And the guy was like, I can't sign. This is not my wife. This is my girlfriend. Ooh. And we're furnishing her apartment.
Oh.
So I can't be on TV with her. So we, you know, you do lose gold sometimes.
So that way, and sometimes people are just like, no, you know. Like,
I love the fact that this guy, of all the days to go to IKEA, and he's thinking, oh, shit, I got to tell these guys, right?
Yeah. Oh, he didn't seem that shy about it.
Oh, okay.
He was like, oh, no, I'm just banging this one. Like, my wife can't find out. He was pretty cool about it. But you do lawyers, because to the contract to sign is like a 2-page small type document, basically signing away your rights. So lawyers, well, they're always like, I'm not signing this.
Okay.
If we stumble upon a lawyer, an actor, or something like that,
it's harmless.
It literally is just like you can be shown on TV. That's all it is. There's no secret to the.
I think some people probably don't like the fact that they got tricked.
That is a very small percentage. We have heard like, well, no, and it's like, so then we'll take them in the back and we'll rewind the footage and show them that it's really about us and it's lighthearted. We'll try to get their number, their contact information. We said, we'll show you a cut of it, or please go home, ask around your friends, or go YouTube it and just see what it is so you understand.
Right.
And then sometimes we'll turn those people and we'll get it back. And then in some instances, you'll see a blur on the show, blurred face. Mm-hmm. And that's because we felt it was good enough to put on despite the blur. Because usually the comedy is driven by their reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes it's just what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you'll see blurs. And that they didn't sign.
I'm here with Sal and Q from the hilarious True TV show Impractical Jokers. There are actually four of you on the show, though, guys, right? I mean, you're all friends. Murr and Joe are the other two guys. Are any of you guys married?
Joe's
okay,
married.
Okay, so you guys are okay then with all these stunts, whereas Joe, maybe once in a while, does he ever hear from his wife going, like, absolutely not. Like, this is, you look like an idiot.
More than that, we use his wife against him.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had her. There was one bit where we had to kiss a stranger, and we took his wife and sat her right down in the playing field, so he had to, like, look at her.
Kiss a woman in front of him,
and he wouldn't do it, and he lost. So.
He lost, got punished.
Yeah, she's good like that. She helps us a lot. Yeah. She actually just helped us punish him big time. Yeah. She gave us access to his house. We do that. We go deep too. Like we've all been inside each other's house when we didn't know. I went to Costa Rica last year. They got my mother to give them the keys. They went in my house. And
how could you even leave? That's the worst.
Yeah, it's not good.
That was crossing a line, I think. But we.
What did they do to your house?
So you know, I don't like germs and stuff like that. So
put a bunch of elephant crap.
Yeah, they got in and it started low and went high, right? So like Murray like ate, drank out of my milk carton, like ate peanut butter with his finger out of myself, and I'm watching that. Well, this is all under the guise of, I didn't know they did this. I was giving a speech. I had to give a speech, a presentation, a PowerPoint presentation to a group of people about like a TED talk, like that kind of thing, about like not sweating the small stuff and not letting everyday stresses.
In Costa Rica?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was on vacation there when they broke into my house. This was later on.
Gotcha.
So I'm giving I don't know what I'm going to give. I just follow the PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, I see.
So I go up blind.
In front of a bunch of
people that came to this. What do you call those other things where people go to classes?
Seminars?
Yeah. Like
seminars.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And so I get there.
Self-help seminars.
Yeah, I get there and I'm like, hello, everyone. I'm Sal and you're here for this. And I don't know till that moment. And I'm here, all right, trying to take everyday stress out of your life and help. And there's, you know, 50 people there and everything. All right, let's look at the first. And I'm doing this presentation. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop about what it's going to be. And then all of a sudden it's like, they somehow, and I forget how, but they weaved in the video of them in my home into not sweating the small stuff. So the people watching don't know that they're in my home. And I'm trying to keep it cool while I'm watching them do all the stuff in my house and just relate it to the speech. So then Joe got naked, rolled all around my couch. He pretended he was sick. So they were like, oh, if you're sick at home, you know, get comfortable. And he's rubbing his balls all over my pillows and everything. He's blowing his nose and sticking it in the cushions.
And I had a kitten at the time. My newest cat was
I hate cats.
Old, the AIDS cats. So I put her on his pillows on his bed, and she was
rubbing
around, like rubbing the kitten on his pillows on his sheets. And stuff
then,
like that.
Then Joe goes.
The video goes, if you're stressed, consider getting a pet. And then it's just me in his bedroom, like letting the kitten run around.
So I'm watching it, and I'm like, and I'm like, yeah, get a pet, you know. And then Joe takes a dump in my toilet, and then he starts touching my toothbrush. It was just terrible. It was absolutely terrible.
Was there anything that just drove you over the
edge?
We danced naked in your window.
In my bay window, they all danced naked.
The neighbors
watching.
The neighbor comes over and goes, I don't know what you are filming in there, and I don't want to know, but please move your car. My husband's coming home soon.
So we do that. You know?
Just move your car.
Yeah, that's Staten Island.
Dance naked. Yeah.
They don't, your parking spot's your parking spot.
Move that car.
Yeah. But your heart drops. Like, the second I saw them, they're like, wave, like it was like they played it all like kitschy, so they're like waving in front of my house. I'm like, oh, my heart sinks, because I'm like, what are they gonna do in my house right now? And you can't do anything. Murray, I mean, we're talking so much about the show, but recently, tell them what we did to Murray with the exam.
Oh my god, this is crazy. I forgot about this. So Murray, he's sitting in the, we tell him, all you got to do is go sit in the audience of this health seminar. That's it. You'll know what to do when the time comes. So he's sitting there in a room of like, I don't know, 50 people.
Yeah.
Mostly men, but a couple of women.
It's on men's health. Men's aging, like what you should look to do and what testing and all that stuff.
So Dr. Frank is up there and he goes, you know, but it's very important when you hit a certain age to get your prostate checked. And he's like, "Is anybody in the audience want to volunteer for a prostate exam?" And Murray, that's when he was asked to volunteer, he had to volunteer.
That's all he knew. We said, when they asked for a volunteer, you're it.
So he just swore it on his face. So he went up and they gave him a proct, like full on.
Wow.
In it, like inserted into him. Checked his prostate instead of a room full of men and women. So then he pulls out and he goes, "Well, then it's important to get a second opinion." And another doctor comes out and gives him another one right there.
We wanted to do third opinion and we got voted down by
the network. Was like,
"Oh, the network."
I thought third opinion would have made it the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. Third opinion, like it's just different men fingering his ass.
Is there a lot of that where you have to get things approved by the network and some things they won't go for?
In the beginning, it was a little worse. There was a different guard at the network. There was like the higher ups. After the first season got replaced, and this new guy, Chris Lynn, came in, who's the president now, who has just been a dream to us. He trusts our instincts. He very rarely, Simi, who's one of our executives on the show, very rarely will they, and they're usually right when they do.
Yeah.
They're usually like, "Yeah, guys," because they have a vested interest in keeping us on the right side of likability, because that's it. And whereas our instincts, being four guys from Staten Island, are way on the other side of that line. So it's been good. And at first, we chafed on there a little bit, I think. But then as years went by and something unexpected happened, families were coming up to us and being like, "We watch this together. I watch this with my daughter. We don't bond over anything. We watch your show."
And a lot.
A switch came to us. We were like, "Wow, all right, so that's not – so because we were like, well, we don't want to make lame comedy. You know what I mean? We want to have an edge. We want to do what's funny." But then that reaction became important to us. So it kind of changed the
Which
flow.
Is fine, too, because it's a challenge because we're trying to be as funny as possible and maintain some type of line. And that's – forces you to be smarter, I think. So,
yeah. It's interesting because it's like, you
or
know,
stupider.
Like the original fans might go like, "Oh, they sold out." It's like a band. "Oh, they sold out." And then you sign to a major deal and you listen to some people that actually know what they're talking about and expand your audience.
Right.
That's kind of what the idea is without compromising your integrity.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you guys could do a bunch of dick and fart and shit jokes, but then you, like you said, you lose that element of people who think they're actually really funny not having it.
We do those jokes. We just limit it to like 5%. Really, we'll do a cap. Like we'll literally like, "All right, we got a dick joke, no more dick jokes."
Can I ask you a question? Because we were at the match, or I was in the match, where you did the thumbtacks in New Jersey.
Jersey. You guys
I was front row.
Oh, that's right. You guys were yelling at me.
69 tacks, right?
That's right, yeah. You guys were catcalling me.
Yeah, I was trying to just, you know.
Yeah.
I was trying to big time you. So, and I, God, man, and I haven't seen you do a match like that in so long.
Yeah.
Just because...
I don't think I ever really have, to be honest with you, that sort of style.
Nobody has, right?
Yeah, no. Like, the thumbtack thing is like, that hasn't happened for maybe 10 years.
Right.
And for the same reasons what we were just talking about. Vince is expanding his audience and the thumbtack is very barbaric.
Right.
So then once it got pitched, I couldn't believe it. You know, because Ambrose wanted to use those thumbtacks.
He pitched it?
He pitched it.
So why isn't he the one getting it?
Because he was winning the match. Originally, I think the idea was for me to win the match. Because when he pitched, I'm like, "You want thumbtacks, dude? Fine, but I ain't taking the bump in it. You go ahead. You bump in it all you want." And then once the finish of the match changed to me losing, I had to take it. And no one told me that, but it's like in the course of the match, he can't take these thumbtack bumps, this bump, and then win. Because you're just throwing it away. You're throwing away the gag. You guys would be able to understand that.
Sure, of course.
We have to protect this gag and make it as brutal as it is because everyone knows what it's like. Well, no one knows what it's like to get clotheslined or body slammed. You don't really know. Everyone knows what it's like to get poked by a...
Right. So it's visceral.
Right. So I had to protect that and make it brutal because it was brutal. You know, that really was 69 tacks. That wasn't just the number that I picked out of the air because it's funny.
Right. I thought it was maybe.
Yeah, no. There was 68 tacks. And then once they pulled them all out, I sat down and got one more tack that was in my jeans that was stuck in my ass.
Oh,
so that was number 69. Boom.
But you knew going in you were taking them.
Yeah.
But,
it was the anticipation of it.
What about you? What were you expecting? Was it worse? Was it worse than you thought?
I just knew. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect, but I just had asked a couple dudes that had taken it. Like, "Oh, it's not so bad." I mean, it's bad, but it's not like, you know, getting whipped with, I think he whipped me with some rope or something that was way worse pain-wise. It's just really weird, you know what I mean? But like you said, you have to protect the integrity of the match, of the gag. You know, like you guys said, you can't say no to the punishment because that takes away the integrity of your show.
Right.
And
right.
as shitty as it is sometimes, no pun intended, right. that's what makes your show work, right?
Yeah.
You know, tell me about the tattoos that you guys had to have. Was that real?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Okay. There it is.
I know. This is.
I showed you this?
Well, no, you didn't, but I saw it. Yeah. He has a tattoo on his leg of Jaden Smith, Will Smith's son, and the kid looks super confused. And Brian has one on his arm that
real
says.
A badass, a biker looking one.
38
lives alone, has three cats with the cutest little kitten.
How come you got yours in the middle of your arm? You got yours on your leg where you can hide it.
The only thing that Joe allowed us in that punishment was. Was where we were going to get there. We didn't know what the tattoos
were. So how did all three of you get punished to where you have to get tattoos?
Because the math.
The math in the episode was we all said no the same amount. So it's not always one loser. It's just
okay.
You could tie as loser. So there's losers with one, two, three. You know what I mean? So he decided to do this. He let us pick the location. And I didn't know what I was going to get, but I put here because I knew it wasn't going to be good. So I was like, I just want to be able to cover it all the time.
And Brian, what was your vibe?
You know what? I don't have many tattoos. I only have like five tattoos, but I would like to get my arm done one day. And I was like, no matter what Joe gets me, I was like, it's going to be a reminder of the show.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I might feel differently if he gave me Jaden Smith. But I kind of had a feeling like I don't know. I don't know. I just thought it would be a good reminder of the show, whatever it turned out to be.
Can I just talk about the raw deal I got?
Yeah, but let's just talk about
it. It's like a 6-inch accurate representation of his face.
But getting a tattoo is a long process, especially like the one, the Jaden Smith one.
Yeah, mine was a half hour.
On that.
There's no
so
color.
What are you doing? Just closing your eyes and looking away?
Yeah. Basically. 3.5 hours this took.
How can you do that? Not like at least want to see what it is
because the camera's on.
I just couldn't. I just laid down and looked forward for 3.5 hours.
And the best part is every once in a while, because once I was done half hour.
Yeah,
I was able. I could go look at his, right. So I would walk over and be like, "Oh, oh man!"
And are you like, "What? What's your reaction?"
I seem to be like. In life and within our relationship, like, I get the worst usually.
Yeah.
Like, they're always making fun of me. Like, if something can go wrong, it will. That's my whole MO. So I knew it was going to be pretty bad, especially from their reactions. But I still didn't expect Jaden Smith. Like, I just didn't expect that. Like, I would have rather had, like, a doodle of a dick on me or something. Like, I don't even know. Like, at least that's funny. This is weird. Like, I've had to adapt to this. Like, now I have to use it for myself.
Right.
So, like, I'll go to, like, a barbecue, and I'll just, like, talk to people, and I'll just, like, for me, I'll just start bringing up Jaden Smith out of nowhere, like, in conversation, until someone's, like, literally, like, why do you keep talking about it? I'll just be like, oh, no, I'm just his number one fan. And then they'll be like, okay, you're Jaden. So I'm like, no, I am. I'm like, I have a tattoo of him. They don't believe me. I take it out. I silence them. And then the rest of the barbecue, I just see them whispering.
You know, it's like, what was that silent movie, That's My Boy, where the guy has a big tattoo of the New Kids on the Block on his back.
Oh, yeah. In Waterboy, what's his name? Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison on his ass. Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like someday, Sal, you're going to get with a chick and she's going to see this and she's going to go, what the hell is wrong with you?
We our last tour that we did, we had about a 15-minute bit on all of our tattoos. Yeah. And that's one of the main points of my bit was that every time that I'm going to be intimate with a woman for the rest of my entire life, I have a decision to make, right? I could tell her about Jaden before my pants come off. Or let her meet him on her own.
how did you ever find out why Jaden Smith was chosen?
I think this was,
the question. Why not? Like, you know what I mean?
I think this is going on 2 years at least ago. And I think he's come more prominently into the public now. But I think it was just the perfect random BS, you know, like.
After Earth had just flopped and, like, everybody was down on him.
Yeah, people know him. It was the most arbitrary random thing. I think that's why.
Oh, man, I remember a couple of people having Chris Jericho tattoos, and I always think, like, someday you're going to wake up and go, like, that was a really dumb idea. It's going to be equivalent of having, like, a Screech tattoo.
Screech for life.
So with the Impractical Joker's like brand name, is this something that's a worldwide appeal? You guys have fans everywhere in the world.
We are learning. We are big in two countries. It is, yes. I think we're on in like 60 countries or something like that.
Yeah, so it's either weird. Our show dubbed or we licensed it and they do a version of our show recast.
That's right. Shit.
Yeah, but so it is
that's
around.
That's like Dancing with the Stars or whoever each country has it, right?
But in England, I think we're more popular in England than we are here. We're actually, we are on a Comedy Central over there and we beat, and I'm not trying to big time these other shows.
We heard this and we couldn't believe it.
Yeah, but we're the number one show out of all Comedy Central's programming in England, which is like Comedy Central's the heaviest.
It's the same programming as here.
Right.
So I don't know how we did that.
And so we get there. We just shot an hour-long episode in London that just aired Thursday night as a response to that. And our live shows there, we sold out the O2 Arena.
No kidding.
Four nights in a row.
You're kidding
me. And they sold out in a day. Like we didn't
know that was going to happen.
O2 Arena is where the WWE performs once every 6 months. Yeah, you guys sold it up. That's like 20,000 seats.
And then.
I think it's like 15. I would,
15.
You know,
for us. And then, we went on to.
You're the only guy that ever under exaggerated.
we try to do that. We got embarrassed a little easy. But then we went on to sell out 11 nights of arena tours in the UK. Sold out. So we're just like blown away. And now we're learning that we have the same impact in India.
Yeah.
To which we're like,
that's unbelievable.
How did that happen, India?
Yeah.
But like you see, like I'm sure you see it too. Like you see the tweets coming from a certain area. Mm-hmm. And India has become like huge for us lately.
You think even think like how the hell did this show get on in India? You know, of all the places.
I'm not getting paid for it.
Overseas, we have Warner Brothers that just makes these deals and distributes it over, you know, so they just do it and we just find out.
Mm-hmm. Is this one of those, I hope it's not one of those terrible stories where you guys had to sell the rights of the show to True TV to get on the air?
No, I mean,
you just get to keep a piece of it.
Yeah,
okay, there you go.
It's small, but
it is. I will say this: it goes back to the guy I mentioned before, Chris Lynn. It sounds like I'm kissing his ass. I'm not.
He's your boss. Shout out to Chris Lynn. We love you.
He'll never hear this. You know what's funny? The first president.
He'll never hear this.
You know who Doug Stanhope is? The comedian Doug Stanhope.
Yeah,
he's become such a dear friend of ours. And the first season, we were complaining about the then president of True TV, and Stanhope goes on to an interview, and because he's so supportive of the show, Stanhope starts talking about what a dick the president of True is because of what we said about him, naming exact quotes from us. We still worked for the guy. I was like,
shut up.
He did it on the air. Right? He went on like Stern and said something crazy.
Yeah, it was insane.
We were like, no, sorry. He's like, I'm just trying to help.
Stop, please stop.
Say anything.
But Chris, the president now, has taken great steps to take care of us and make us feel, you know, like an important piece of the puzzle over there. So, no, we don't get... You know, like friends, like we
residuals,
never,
ever,
we don't get any of that.
Oh, yeah, it's not a residual thing, but, you know, when it's like sold is like a very, very. Like
I got you. But it's more about the brand name. Like you said, the live shows is the key.
Yeah.
You know, you guys go because that's what everything in entertainment nowadays is basically based on the live shows because music is free. You know, TV shows are basically everywhere online, whatever. It's going in front of that audience is where you can really, really.
And what's great about it is they play our show so much. Like we've banked about 130 some odd episodes and that's good for people to just be on. It's on all the time. It's on True.
Right?
It's on all these other countries all the time. And that is actually just has benefited us so much because, you know, we just keep gaining audience and stay relevant. And then we tour off the heels of that. Mm-hmm. And we've seen exponential growth over the 4 years that we started touring.
And if we did have a deal where we got residuals like most people do on TV shows, they wouldn't air it that much.
Mm.
So
hardly at all.
Yeah, they probably air it once a week. So, like, we kind of feel the trade-off's worth it for us in terms of the live show.
So what about your live show in an arena? I mean, that's a lot of people out there. It's still the same things, just the video screens, and you guys just hanging around with people's phones and stuff?
So far, it's translated pretty well. So far,
we haven't done anything that big yet. The most we've done here is like maybe like 5,000-6,000,
mm-hmm. which is huge.
No, Radio City was
6,000.
Oh, 6,000.
Yeah.
How was that for you guys doing Radio City Music Hall, four schlubs from Staten Island?
Dude.
It was... We're doing a comedy show, and I'm like holding back tears a little bit. You know what I mean? Because our whole families are there. It's my favorite theater in the world. I've been going there since I'm a little kid.
Sure.
You know, just to even like be like backstage, and we signed the guest book, and it was just crazy. It sold out. We had three nights there, and they all sold out. And it on the marquee it said three nights sold out, and they had these big pictures of us outside. And it was like we just. we're still very much outside this. Mm-hmm. I am. I mean,
I can tell. I mean, you guys are so humble and just laid back.
Every single thing outside of this show in my life is completely the same exact as it was before. Everything, my routines, like my my, like, you know, like my, you know, everything's the same. It's like nothing's changing. I look at it like, I look in and like, oh my God, I can't believe like that we're doing this. Like, are we allowed to be here? Should we be here? Like, and you just soak it all up, and then, you know, I go home and lay down on my couch, and that's it. And I can't believe that we're doing it.
Yeah. Well, it's also like six years. I guess we've been on the air 6 years. 6 years and a day ago, I never even considered a career in television or entertainment. So like the whole first season of the show, this is just speaking for me, because Sal's, just because he's here, is a way more natural performer than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to do it. He's the funniest guy I know. So it's like if you watch that first season, like, there's some things where I don't talk at all because I just don't know how.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like if just for me, like the learning curve for me to how to be on TV took away any, because I felt like a fraud. So you can't walk around with a big head when you're like, I shouldn't even be here.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
And yeah, exactly. I still don't know what to do with my hands. And then the live
But he show, was so far. It's so far, it's in his head, though. You know what I mean? Like, it
right.
was.
Well, maybe that played into it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the dynamic we have with us is what makes it. Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I mean? So, if speaking on that, for me, the only thing you need to know is how to hang out with me for our show.
Yeah,
and it's as funny as anything
that's
that
your
can
chemistry,
be.
Right.
Yeah.
So with a live show, like, the first, like, I only feel good. I've been on, we've been doing this 3 years now, touring, 4 years.
Yeah,
I only feel like this new show, I'm starting to be good at it. Like, the first show, I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing up here. So Radio City for me was, there was a moment where I purposely didn't get to the theater early. I didn't go out on stage. I didn't want to see anything until I walked out onto the stage for the first time. And there have been so few times in my life that I have just felt overwhelmed. And there was a feeling of like, because as much as one, I'm kind of have like this thing with depression anyway. I never really ever feel that good about myself. But that was the moment where I was like, it took Radio City to be like, and walking out and seeing Radio City from the stage and seeing all the people I love in the audience, seeing all the guys I used to work with, seeing my parents, seeing all this. It's like there was a moment where I couldn't even speak for a minute. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's just like I'm getting goosebumps now just talking about it because it's like I'm kind of at a loss for words to say how it felt.
It meant a lot to you to be there.
It meant a lot.
Yeah. And you know what that means, too? You guys are selling it 3 nights at Radio City.
Yeah.
That's the litmus test for The Garden. That'll be the next show. You guys might already have it booked. I don't know. But
no.
It's coming.
I mean that's what we were told when that happened.
Yeah, that's always.
But we don't ever like to put any car before any horse.
Yeah.
And so I would never even say it until, like,
I'll say it. I bet you it's coming very soon, which is great. But you guys have such a big fan base. Have you met some of your heroes or some people that kind of like, oh my God, it's so and so?
Yeah. Oof. And you know, they say don't meet your heroes and stuff. But I think like everyone that we've gotten to meet in comedy, in just personalities like yourself, really, I'm being
dude,
serious.
You're one of them, man.
Yeah. I was thinking that when you said it.
Yeah.
I was like,
I moved 5 years ago, so I haven't unpacked all my boxes yet from it. I wish I was kidding. I spent yesterday and this morning digging through the box. I have a picture of me and you from the WCW Nitro Cafe in Vegas.
You're kidding
when you did
me.
An appearance there. You did an appearance there at the cafe, and I was there with my then girlfriend, and the line for you was around the block. They hadn't opened it yet.
Wow.
I went up to the guy at the front door and I said, Jericho's my favorite wrestler. I was like,
Did you slip
the guy 20
bucks, right?
I go, if I give you 20 bucks, can I just run in and meet him real quick? So no, I was the first person to meet you
on
that
great.
Line. And I have a picture, and your hair wasn't like in that little
thing. I put it up for the the Gene Simmons top hat.
Yeah, so I have a picture of me, you, and my girl, and it's just me with my arm around you like that. And I wanted to find it and bring it tonight, but I couldn't.
Oh, yeah, you were saying that yesterday.
Yeah, that's so
dude,
great, man.
So you've been my favorite wrestler for
slipped
a long
him a 20.
Time. And I got and I told you that at the time, and you went, it wasn't worth it. You made a good joke about it. It was funny.
We have a fun one. When we met Piper that time.
Yeah.
I had a funny story with him. He was there at, I don't even know where.
It was Planet Hollywood.
Signing his book or whatever.
Yeah.
And we wait on this line, and we're watching, and his son was there, and he was saying hello, and he was so genuine. Like, he was looking everyone right in the eye. He was intense.
Him, yeah.
And he was like, asking questions to about people.
Like super nice.
Yeah.
Overly nice.
And his son's there and he's like bringing his son into the conversation. A lot of hugs. Just like, and I was like, well, so we're watching this for like an hour. And I get up there. And so my dad brought me to WrestleMania 2. So we went to Nassau Coliseum. It was when they split it up in four different locations. So I saw Piper box Mr. T.
Mr. T.
So my dad snuck us down. We were all the way in the top and he snuck down. That was, I guess, when you could. Threw me on his shoulders and we were close to the ring for that. And that was my favorite thing that I've ever seen for wrestling. So I went to go tell him, and we finally got up there, and I'm like, I was like, you know, it's so nice to meet you. And he's like, oh my God, thank you. And I said, I just want to let you know, like, I went to WrestleMania 2. You know, my dad took me way a long time ago, whatever. And it was like one of the best moments of my life. And it was something I share with my dad that I'll never forget, a moment with me and my dad that you gave me. And he was like, he hugged me and everything, and he pulled away, and he's like, oh, that's amazing. I said, he's like, and how long has dad not been with us? And I was like, my dad's outside.
It was funny. And then I went next and I start going, this is how nice the guy was. I start telling him the same stuff. I'm like, me and my dad. Piper starts crying.
He starts
getting emotional. He brings his son over and he's like, you gotta hear this story. And I'm like, you must have heard this story 10 times today. How are you still crying?
Wow.
He
welled up when he said, how long's dad not been with us? And then I just took a beat. I almost just said my dad was dead because I didn't want to negate I was gonna literally make up a date like August 92, and then
your dad would walk in. And
I was like, why my dad's here?
Get
dad's
the car,
here.
Son. Who have you guys? Have you had some people on the show? Some fans? Some celebrities?
Joey
on the
Fatone
show?
On the show.
Nice.
That worked out funny because he was a big fan and his daughter is a fan.
Mm.
So he, I guess. I forgot how it had Twitter.
I connected with him over our podcast.
Right. And he was like, hey, do you mind if I come to set? And then he came to set with his daughter, and we were just like, let's just throw you out there and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's been the only one on the show. We have friends and people that want to get on that we'd love to get on.
Right.
But we want it to be organic. We don't just want it to be like, oh, this is a... Yeah. We started talking about doing a theme episode because we're friendly with so many wrestlers now. Mm. We're so big into WWE.
We met backstage at the Barclays Center, I believe.
So we want to do that or like a hip-hop show because we just some of our legends.
Wu-Tang fans and Method Man, we've become friendly with him.
And DMC.
Oh, DMC.
Oh, he's the best, man.
They're big fans. So
he's the best.
I met him at a Comic-Con. He came at me so hard. He's like, dude, he comes to give me a hug. And it took me a second to be like, what's happening? I don't even know who this is. And then I look at him and I'm like, oh, you see? He was so enthusiastic. I was like,
he's one of my favorite guests I've ever had on this show. He was so good.
So positive, right?
Another intense, positive guy. Yeah.
I mean, Rosie O'Donnell was on your show.
That's right. Yeah,
she was a lookalike. You're
Yeah. I get called Rosie every day.
She was awesome. What a great sport.
Yeah, she really was.
She came on. She just asked us to donate to our charity. She did us such a favor.
Yeah,
it was very nice of her. And we're like, thank you so much. She's like, I want to help out young comedians.
Yeah, that's great. Man.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the future plans for the Impractical Jokers brand?
Well, we have it in our heads that we think we can expand and try to make an Impractical Jokers movie.
Mm.
So we're putting our minds to that now. And, you know, just exploring the overseas opportunity stuff. Of course, we hope to be renewed and live touring. But we also do like a lot of like...
Well, actually, they're going to announce that we're renewed next week, so we can say it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Renewed.
Okay. Yeah, we got season six.
Awesome.
Next Thursday.
Okay.
As long as you don't put this up before then.
Yeah. So we got next season.
Screw you guys over. Put all this up. There's tarantulas. There's feminists. They're renewed again.
So we have season
also
three.
A play in the garden. No, I'm kidding. We're totally not. Yeah.
And there's an Impractical Jokers board game.
We tried to do that.
Did you?
Yeah. I want to do an Impractical Jokers slot machine.
Oh, that would work.
Yeah, because we go and you see a pinball. Yeah, yeah. But we go to play these casinos and I'm like, these people come out and droves. I'm like, I think a slot machine would be good.
Yeah, the poker chips with their faces on
them.
Yeah. So last question. It's a two-parter. First of all, who's your favorite wrestler of all time? You can answer that one.
I guess Piper. Piper, Steamboat.
Yeah.
I
was a huge Steamboat.
Yeah.
Actually, I worked with both those guys at WrestleMania that one year.
Yeah.
Me versus Piper, Steamboat, and Snuka.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean... I guess I really liked Macho Man too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. How about you, Q?
Piper is always my number one. It's going to sound like I'm ass kissing, but I'm dead serious. You,
yes.
It was always Piper than you because you always seem
you're completely up there, dude.
Like the heir apparent to Piper.
That's a good call. Yeah.
When you were like when you're in your like heel mode and you're going to me like you always channel that so 100%. Well that I was always like I still have one of your old. Jericho-holics t-shirts and stuff like that. I always love you, Stick. That's why the stupid idiot now.
Yeah,
that's what we love so it because right now, I swear, right now, there is no one more entertaining to watch than you.
New Day too.
New Day too. I agree. Well, we have they're so funny too. But you do it with more of a wink than anyone else. Yeah. Like to the audience. Mm-hmm. Like I just feel like. Everyone's in on it with you completely, and I laugh out loud. I laugh out loud.
We text each other. Darn it!
You just never know who's watching. You know.
Yeah. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to evoke what you evoke.
But it's the same concept as what you guys are doing. It's commitment. You commit 1,000% to it, and people will respond. If there's any wavering for it, people know that you're not legit, and they won't buy it.
Right.
You know, that's what you guys make your whole career on.
Right.
Yeah. You're so good at it, dude.
You know? What's your last question? What's your favorite gag that's ever been on the previous five seasons of Impractical Jokers? If you had to choose just one.
Well, I would say within the show, there's so much to like think on now, but I think one time we played dentists and you know, that's ridiculous. We got a dentist to give us his office.
How the hell do you do that?
We got it.
These people are walking in, getting screwed with.
People come in, and then, you know, sure, after they see us, they go see the real dentist.
Yeah.
But they walk in, and, like, they walk in to the dentist office. We close the door. We're in the dentist room, and we don't know anything about dentistry.
We're
in the everything. And I say, hey, you know what? I remember I wanted to give myself some credibility, so I was on the phone when the guy walked in. I was like, pull it. And I hung up, and I'm like, hey, I'm just in the middle of something, you know? And then he walked in, and I put him in the chair, and it was a brand new state-of-the-art dentist office. I remember they gave us a little briefing, like, just tell us what a couple of tools' names are so we don't look completely. And the guy says right before, he goes, oh, this is a brand new chair. It's like a $10,000 chair. I'm like, oh, great. He walks out. My first guy comes in. They go, I put the guy in the chair. They go, put him back in the chair. So I hit the button to put him back. I don't know why these new state-of-the-art chairs do this, but it goes such that it goes this far back. So his head
is totally
here.
Unnecessary.
His feet are here. Yeah. And I didn't know. So when it broke that plane and kept going, I was like,
He's
completely vertical. Then they say, put him up. So I start to put him up in the air, and the chair went 8 feet in the air. So his head is upside down and now above my head.
That little bib is going over his face.
He was wearing sandals, so his bare feet were brushing the ceiling. And I never, ever, I couldn't compose myself. I couldn't hide it. And it was slow, too. It was very methodical. So it's like, zzz, and he's passing my face, and he's telling me he has because I just said this one. He said he had a toothache. I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, I made this one up. 10 being the worst. How bad your pain? And he's like, oh, like a 9. A breeze can't even hit it. And I was like, oh, and then knowing that he was in that much pain and I was always to go 10 feet into the air, I literally said, I'm sorry, and I walked out in the middle of it. And then I walked out. When I walked out, I realized I left him that way. So he's stuck alone. The door slams closed. His bib falls over his head, and he's upside down in the room alone. And I'm in the hallway. I just fell to the ground. I had that day I had a splitting headache because of how hard I laughed. And I'll never remember. Like, that moment really sticks with me, moment.
Did you lose and had to get punished?
I lost.
What does the guy say? Like, hey, buddy, we're just kidding.
He was so nice.
Oh, that's great.
He just was like, oh, okay. Because, you know, the doctor was his doctor, I guess. And then the doctor was like, hey, you know, I'm letting the guys here. It's all in fun, you know. So.
Yeah. You could have sued your ass, though, right?
A lot of people said
that. Yeah, I got reverse crucified at the dentist. How about you, Brian?
This joke, this is my favorite joke. I don't even have to think about it. We were doing, it was Sal and Joe, and they were doing one of those presentations where they don't know what slide's going to come up. And they were doing it on a timeshare. So they were supposed to be selling a timeshare to this room full of people. And they have this they're going, and of course we're making it as horrible as possible because we wrote it for him. And then he goes, Joe goes, well, good news. He goes, we caught the alligator that ate the DeLuca boy, so that won't be a problem anymore. And then Sal just starts losing it.
I lose a lot.
And then the next slide goes, we stuffed him in the lobby. And then he goes, the alligator, not the DeLuca boy. And, like, just the idea of a stuffed kid in the lobby. And he lost it. And he starts walking. He's sitting in the corner laughing like this. And Joe's going, turn, you want to get your shit together, pal, and get back here in the middle of it?
Well, that was great. There was just one, quickly, there was one other time we were given a seminar. And sometimes we team up. So me and Joe were giving a seminar on ethics and workplace moral code how to behave in the workplace. And we're given this, and of course it's politically incorrect, and we have a room full of people. And then all of a sudden it says, like, this is an example of what not to do. And I hit the thing, and is it you? You. This idiot. All of a sudden, there's a secretary, and it's my youngest sister. Okay,
and say how old? Do you make it sound like
she was my youngest? She's now 30. At the time, I guess she was 25,
right.
And she's a secretary, and she's doing a thing. And I never didn't
she's
know.
Very attractive.
I didn't know that. Like, we get each other's family involved. We don't tell anyone, so I had no idea. And I see my sister, and I go like this, and I go. And they catch it on camera. I'm like,
double take.
And I'm literally like, oh, what are you going to? And he walks in and he's like, hey, did you get those reports? He's in the video. And she's like, yes, I did. And he's like, thank you. Thank you very much. And did you reach over and grab a boob?
I just reached in and grab a boob.
He grabs my sister's boob on the goddamn thing. I'm in front of everyone and I am not laughing. I'm literally.
Because you're Italian, man.
Yeah.
You see the video.
I called
his
father
beat red.
And asked permission before I did it. Yeah,
I get beat red, and I'm literally not laughing. I'm not laughing. Like, I can't even find it in myself. I'm so mad, and they're crying. Remember, I hear the other guys crying. You know, because that's the thing too. When people are in the room, they don't know I'm hearing everyone laughing. So it's I'm like just fuming, and Joe's doing it with me, and Joe's laughing. He's like smiling because he knows what's going on, but he's not giving it away. And then we go to play the next video. And it's Joe's sister. Joe was just laughing at me while I was red in the face. And Murray comes in and starts grabbing Joe's sister's ass. And he's really palming it and everything. And then Joe's face turns to my face. And I cried laughing so hard. I was tearing up because it just the rollover. Like, you saw him laughing. And he went. And that's another one. The second time ever, I just walked out of the room and left Joe there alone to get the rest of the scene because I was laughing so hard. But so, you know, we're crossing all sorts of lines.
Well, laughter is definitely a lot of it here with you guys, man. It's been awesome, man. The Impractical Jokers.
I'm sorry I was late.
Oh, man, I'll never let you. I'll never forgive you for that, as a matter of fact.
Please have us back, man. This was fun.
Oh, this was fun,
it
right?
Just flew.
Yeah, it's been an hour and 10 minutes, but we're all going to go to the garden tonight and watch some rats.
Awesome, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks to the Impractical Jokers, Q and Sal. Please check out Impractical Jokers on True TV. It is really so funny. I became a huge fan after I had these guys on the show. They pull the craziest improv gags and pranks on each other. And congrats to Sal, Q, Murray, and Joe. They just got picked up for a season 6 on True TV. And the four of them are also touring and doing live shows all over the country. They actually perform as the Tenderloins. That's the name of their comedy troupe. And you can purchase tickets at thetenderloins.com. Go see them if you can. I guarantee you will laugh your ass off. And also, too, make sure you ask to see Sal's tattoo of Jaden Smith. Okay, I'm going to post that picture on the Twitter later on today. It's so funny. It's so ridiculous. He actually has to walk around with a picture of Jaden Smith on his thigh for the rest of his life. But that's the price you pay to be an Impractical Joker and to be a Tenderloin. So thanks for Sal and Q for hanging with me while I was in New York City. And while I'm saying thank you, let me say thanks to the OG sponsor of Amazon who's been supporting Talk is Jericho since podcast number one. And thanks to you people for helping me out by doing all your shopping on my Amazon links. Find them at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Got Amazon links for the USA, UK, Canada as well. Every time you use them to Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy just about anything you can think of on Amazon, and using them Talk is Jericho Amazon links don't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. Once again, podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button on top of the page and then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You'll find all my other sponsors there as well, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You get 15% off the DDP Yoga program plus 3 months full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. Change your life for the better. DraftKings.com. Use my promo code Y2J to play for free with no deposit this weekend, win some money. Then there's Lisa. Go to lisa.com/Jericho for your 100-night risk-free trial mattress and save $75 off your mattress order. Remember, after 99 nights, if you don't like it, they'll come pick it up for free. All right. Thanks to everybody for checking out the Jericho Network as well at Podcast One. Man, we're turning into an empire, okay? We are doing our best to keep you entertained every day of the week. Keep it at 100 with Conan, the biggest hit on the Jericho Network. Great cast of characters, a lot of fun. Team Tiger Awesome, releasing hilarious episodes every Sunday. Last week, they had the hottest horror movie villains, and it came down to Freddy Krueger and Chucky. And I'm not going to tell you who was the sexiest out of those two. They're completely insane and very, very funny. Growing every day, check that on Sunday morning. And also, the brand new addition to the Jericho Network, I'm proud to announce Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. They've got a PhD in pro wrestling and a truckload of stories about their careers in ECW, WCW, WWE. They're going to analyze in the most intelligent way pro wrestling nowadays, the characters, the gimmicks, the booking. If you guys like podcasts, these guys are probably going to be your smartest podcast. They probably got a combined IQ of 700 between the two of them. The first episode, the debut of Killing the Town, is coming on Tuesday, October 18th. Go subscribe on iTunes, leave them a comment and a 5-star rating for all of my podcasts while you're there. Viva Los Jericho Network. And hey, speaking of a big podcast, only 150 days and counting until my new nemesis, Mick Foley, is on Talk is Jericho. It's going to be the biggest podcast ever. So 150 days, March 15th, 2017, Mick will be here. Thank you so much for listening, though. In the meantime and in between time, keep listening for the 60-second AP news headlines coming up next. And coming up next Wednesday, get your rock on with Last in Line. It's the original Dio band. We're talking about Vivian Campbell from Def Leppard, Phil Soussan, who played with Ozzy Osbourne, and of course, Vinny Appice, who played with Black Sabbath. All those guys were in the original Dio band. Phil and Vivian will be here talking about some great stories of Ronnie James Dio, some great stories about Ozzy Osbourne, some great stories about Hearing Aid back in 1986. You're not going to want to miss this one. If you like 80s heavy metal like Dio and Ozzy and Scorpions and Priest and Maiden, who doesn't? You got to check out The Last in Line. Vivian Campbell, Phil Soussan will be here. Rock and Roll Mayhem on Talk is Jericho. Next Wednesday, we'll see you there. And until then, it's a big stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. Yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.